Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, I have Christopher Tamman and Ray Marchand. They're both with American Veteran Lighting. Christopher is the VP of Sales and National Accounts. From Whittier, California, and currently residing in Bray, California, he held the following positions in his career. Regional Manager for Philips for the Southeast Region. Positions he had: National Sales Director, Regional Manager, National Distributor, Marketing Director, ESCO, a bunch of different things. In 2004, he launched Raylight Industries, Inc., and in 2017 formed a partnership with Ray Marchand and launched American Veteran Lighting, Inc. He's a very competitive tennis player and a proud father of two daughters. Off to Ray Marchand, he's a distinguished Army veteran and an accomplished professional. The chairman of American Veteran Lighting, he plays a vital role in driving the company's marketing efforts. With a deep commitment to serving customers, Ray places customer satisfaction as the highest priority. Drawing from a wealth of experience and leadership skills gained during his military service, Ray brings a unique perspective to the lighting industry. Passionate about delivering exceptional lighting solutions, he strives to enhance the lives of customers through innovative products and outstanding service. Ray shares his expertise and insights. He's going to do that right now, shedding light on the importance of quality lighting and its impact on various aspects of our lives. But before we get to Ray and Chris, Greg, we got to tell Chris to mute himself for a second because he's got some feedback going on. Can you press mute for a second? Yeah, something's up there. But before we get into the conversation, we got to talk about SATCO, Greg Garrick, SATCO.com, light thing, right thing.
That's right. So I had a customer that I've been dealing with, a retail customer that needed track lighting, par lighting, flat panels, A lamps, decoratives, and G9 lights. How many manufacturers can you say have all that? Not many.
But don't waste your time thinking about it. Just go to SATCO.com, baby. That's all.
Exactly. We got it all, man. Cover it, and they have the stock, they have the product, they have the options, quality of the people to back it, everything that goes along with it, SATCO.
The Gangsters, SATCO, SATCO.com, and of course, proud members, longtime members, Greg, of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. If you have a warehouse with light bulbs in it, and people call you or email you or order off your website, this is your trade association. Go to NAILD.org and hook up with us in September at the convention. That's right, NAILD.org. Now, because Chris is having a little bit of trouble with his audio there, we're going to go to Ray first. And then, Chris, I'll signal over to you, and you can take your mic off mute. Ray, welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, Greg, why don't you kick this one off?
Yeah, so just checking a little bit. I don't know a lot about you guys, but one thing I do see is that you changed your name in 2017. Prior to that, you were called Raylight Industries. And that might be Chris's category to kind of cover the history and the background on the company until where you're at today.
Yeah, so if Chris, you want to jump in and introduce what Raylight Industries was, and then we can kind of go into where we are today as American Veteran Lighting.
Yeah, so let me know how my mic's working here.
Sounds good.
Everybody hear me okay?
Yeah, it sounds good
okay.
Now. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, great. The original Raylight was called Raylight Glass. It was born in 1939, and it went through two generations, and the glass business began to change as the plastics became stronger. Long story short, in the early 2000s, I spoke with my stepfather, who would own the company, and we arranged a purchase. I bought it and converted into wholesale lighting and energy management company. So that was the inception of Raylight, and that was in 2004. And from there, we've just been accumulating a base business. We still provide energy management calculations. We have our own system to do that. And we formulate different other specialties, pole testing, et cetera, to differentiate ourselves. Because Southern California just happens to be one of the most competitive markets around. And so we have to continually look for different ways. And Ray is one of the keys to doing that. Hence, in 2017, we met in a kind of the need for marketing for Raylight. And we ended up coming up with a brilliant idea of creating American Veteran Lighting using Ray's expertise, which happened to be what I needed to begin with, because he is the technology expert.
So one of the key things I think that I brought to the table was exactly that, right? Bringing the Raylight into sort of the modern age of technology and using the newest marketing techniques to do that. The other hole that I really helped to fill was one where Raylight, I believe at the time, had a limited entry into government contracts, and that was another big thing that I wanted to bring to the table, is how do we get into the government contract space. And so by creating this partnership and creating American Veteran Lighting, we were able to do that, and that became one of the focuses. We were able to add another arm to our marketing efforts.
Nice. And I do want to talk more about that. But before, I just got to go back to you, Chris, a little bit, because 1939 to 2004 is a long time. What was Raylight Glass? What did they do exactly? Because I felt like I heard the name when I read that.
Yeah, and you probably have, because Raylight was known for the glass street lighting globe in particular. They had a huge factory in Southgate, Southern California. And that was in place really just after World War II. Arnie Anderson started it. He was a Norwegian, so he was an immigrant. And that would be the father to my stepfather, who was Robert Lee Anderson. Anyway, they had about 75, 80 employees, and they turned out glass street lighting globes by literally the thousands. And so you'll see the classic acorn, the Victorian style, and these are large globes. It's hand blown glass, and they're as large as 30 inches high, and 22 inches wide. I mean, they're just gigantic, and they light up the streets of most major cities in the United States. And in the 70s, the plastics started to be very competitive. The quality was still not there, and it probably still isn't. Glass pretty much lasts forever unless it's vandalized, which doesn't happen frequently. But at any rate, the competitive part of the glass in producing, especially with the unions, the costs of manufacturing with natural gas to heat the glass and so on, it became a little bit non-competitive. And so along those period of time, we ended up starting to outsource labor. And like I said, in the early 2000s, that's when my stepfather just decided to, pretty much relinquish the business. I bought him out, and we can still produce the glass street lighting globes today. It's just that we outsource it to a manufacturer in Tennessee. So, and that's where we are today with that. But that's a very small portion of our business. Percent of a percent.
So people can still
now
get
it's wholesale lighting and energy management.
Glass globes.
And so now we So after some good years with Raylight, though, that's when Ray and I teamed up.
Can I say something real interesting?
Of course.
So one of my favorite parts when Chris and I first met, and he was telling me about Raylight Industries, or Raylight Glass rather. Walking down Disneyland, right, the main avenue, I believe, Chris, and you can correct me if I remember the story incorrectly, but weren't most of those globes Raylight Glass at one point?
Yeah, and some of them still are. They slowly get replaced as they are maintained over a period of time, and the lighting source is upgraded. So yeah, and that's when they convert to plastic. There are other glass manufacturers that make two piece. Ours is a one piece. So there's spun glass and there's blown glass, and we were all hand blown glass.
Sounds like a shipping nightmare. Probably got to extra pad that stuff.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, and we did it. Yeah, sandblasted the inside to create that soft glow. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Well, yeah, that makes sense now, because I know I've seen the name before and I heard it. So I appreciate that background. Now we'll get into today's world a little bit more. Ray, so as an Army veteran, I assume, is that actively, what percent of your business is doing military or not government account type business?
So we're still trying to grow. So the thing with the government contract side of things is that it's extremely competitive, which is why we're using every little bit of advantage that we can grab a hold of to grow that side of the business. So I would say, what do you think, Chris? Actively, the government contract side probably makes up 15, 20% of the business, or
You're right on. Is I'd say about right about 15%.
Okay.
Yeah, and while we're talking, we actually just we just converted a customer for about $100,000 order, so
Nice.
which was track lighting system for a State of California museum,
Good
which we
project.
wouldn't have had the opportunity had it not been for the disabled veteran aspect of the business.
So yeah, and speaking of that, Mike, you probably don't. I don't know that Canada. He's out of Toronto, if they have that there. But based, I'm in Minnesota, and I have my partner is a woman, so we're technically woman owned. And there is a whole avenue that we're still learning. I've been in it for 18 years. She's been in it for 30, and it's like every day something new comes, and you're like, "What is this thing?" And
Exactly.
you gotta dive into it. So
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, so
It's
it sounds
never
like
ending.
something.
Never ending regulations, never ending updating and keeping up, with what's new, and absolutely.
Is it very state by state? Do you know? Because the stuff we do on that is primarily in Minnesota because we're here. And you guys,
Yeah,
are you everywhere?
so we are service disabled at the government level. We are also service disabled at the state level. And so those are two completely different, certifications. And so the process for each of those is completely different. A lot of, I'd say most, some of it is the same, but they're completely different as far as what the requirements are, what percentage of ownership, these sort of things. But it does vary if it varies state by state, or it varies if it's a government contract, and whether you're certified at that level or not.
At the risk of sounding insensitive, and since we're on the topic, do you mind if I ask you guys a few questions about this?
Sure.
Do you think
Don't,
that
yeah,
these
go ahead.
types of programs should exist, Ray? Like, and when I say that, so for example, I don't live in Minnesota. I don't know if women or minorities need a leg up there. What do I know? I sell light bulbs in Toronto. But whenever I encounter these, I always find like it's a lot of paperwork and it's a lot of kind of hoop
It's a
to
lot of
jumping through.
hoops. Yeah.
And it like it, and I wonder whether you need to actually have the woman owned or you need to be good at filling out paperwork. Like I'm not sure which one it is. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So let me give you my experience. So my experience in this has been that, is it worth it? It's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of time, like you said, paperwork that you have to fill in. But when you land that $250,000 contract because you're, a veteran-owned business, and like that gave you that half a percentage more that you needed to land that contract, that's when it makes it worth it. Is it worth it the other, 99.5% of the time? I mean, but we landed one contract that was worth, quite a bit. So it's kind of, you have to look at it from that filter, from that perspective. It wasn't for probably the first 2 or 3 years, but then we landed that one contract that made everything worth it. So I
Can
hope
I
that makes sense.
interject?
Sure.
Let me interject something really quick to kind of to answer, Dave, the woman-owned aspect of it. With Ray, he makes the contracts seem easy. And so that's one of the critical parts of this formula is if you're going to offer the disabled veteran, the small minority business type of marketing and offer those services that go with it, the advantages and so on, you have to administrate those things as well. And so when you see the opportunity, Ray is 10 times more expeditious than I would be. I mean, I would look at it, have to read it several times. He's got everything set up. He's got all of the certifications. all of the PDFs ready. He knows how to sign all the documents, read them completely. And we just partner in terms of, you know, basically the manufacturers, the products we want to offer, the margins and so on to, you know, put a successful package together. But he's, you know, really 95% of that aspect is you don't have to worry about the time it takes to invest in pursuing that. He gets it done quick. So, I mean, literally, I've seen him do things in an hour before the due date. and it's a first look for him. So it's amazing.
Pulling it off at the last minute. Okay, I got a question here. Yeah. So I don't know if these programs, some of them must be federal, some of them must be state level, and there's probably different criteria for them. Mm-hmm. But is it, as a general rule, is it like woman-owned, minorities, and veterans, if that's a way that you can have an advantage in these projects, that those all go together? Or is sometimes it's a veteran program, sometimes it's a woman program, sometimes it's a minority? How does that, is it always one batch, or is it like different types of things that matter?
So it's both. We get a mix of both. Sometimes it's just, you know, if you're a disadvantaged business, what they call a disadvantaged business, there's set asides for that. And then sometimes it's veteran owned. So sometimes it's woman owned. Sometimes, and so there's set asides for that. The set asides typically are much, much smaller, much less competitive. And there's a much better chance of grabbing those opportunities. Whereas the ones that are bunched up with everybody else are a lot more competitive, right? There's a lot more people trying to get their hands in the pool, so to speak. And so everything has to be, you know, precise. Everything has to be perfect, down to, you know, your research of your margin. Did you properly research, you know, what the customer is willing to pay, and are you going to be in the limit? One of the other big, big advantages, especially on the federal level, is that there's a certain percentage cost advantage, meaning that, for example, you know, in some jobs, we'll get a 10% advantage. So if somebody from, you know, a different state or maybe that's not in certified as a disadvantaged business puts in a bid for, say, $1,090, or I'm sorry, $1,000, and we put in a bid for $1,090, just these numbers, and we have a 10% advantage. That means that we could have gone all the way up to 1,100 and still met equally, because we have that 10% advantage. So at 1,090, even though we're $90 more, we are actually better priced because we have that 10% advantage when it comes to our pricing. So that's
you're not able to know what the other person's bidding anyway. You're just putting your bid
right.
in.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I get it. That's so interesting.
But we do get that leeway.
Mm. One more question. Go ahead, Chris, first.
And sure, then no, you first.
Well, what I wanted to ask was...
You
go.
Okay, I'm going. So I was just going to say, in addition to the advantage, though, it's still not... There's no excuse, or there's no really way around being a genuine, you know, service provider.
Oh, sure.
And putting, you know, your... Yeah. And so you still have to offer all of those things, and there's still that competitive aspect of it. So it's never a gimme. I don't think there's been any that were just handed over for that aspect alone. It's, you have to prove yourself as well.
So the final question would be, you know, if you're, so this is for disabled veterans. That's what that's the category?
Correct.
If a veteran is disabled, are people informing them that these programs exist? Because it would be interesting to see, like, if you're in the Army, you're coming out, maybe you had some problem, who knows what it is, right? And it's actually none of anyone else's business, right? But if you've been, you know, been injured as a veteran for the armed forces, do they tell you, hey, you know what, you may want to consider getting into a business partnership, or you may want to consider starting a business if you have an area of expertise, because these programs exist? Do they teach people about, like, do veterans know that this advantage exists for them?
So the outreach goes like this, you know, as a veteran, I had to go and look for these resources. I'm the one that had to go and, you know, looking on Google's like, hey, you know, I'm a veteran and I want to own a business. Oh, there's these things called veteran-owned businesses. Then the next step for me was going into, right, the Small Business Administration, the SBA. Once I was at the SBA, I was paired up with, luckily, right, I was blessed enough to be paired up with a counselor there who knew about these programs, and that's how I became aware of it. So they, from my understanding, they aren't actively tooting these out to the public. You do have to remember the veteran population is a very, very tiny population of the United States. So it's not something that people are, you know, wanting to necessarily put money into as a marketing campaign, for example. But the information is readily available. Once you find out about it, you can jump into, you know, something like the SBA and then get more information. And then, like I said, from there's just so many different tentacles that you have to get, so many paths that you have to follow to get to the exact certification, classification, whatever it is for your niche, right? Whatever it is that you're doing, and whether it exists for that or not. So, a lot of research.
So, are you guys doing installs as well or service work on these contracts for the government, or is it just a supply that you're working with?
You want to take it,
So
Ray,
it's
or you
just
want me
as
to?
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
So no, we don't provide labor. There was a point at one time where we did create a division for that, but we do not do that anymore. We chose to concentrate and be the best wholesale lighting energy management, you know, distributor we could possibly be. And so, not to get ourselves confused you know, divert our energies elsewhere. We just want to be an excellent distributor and have good technology available to us through our manufacturing partners.
I love
So,
it.
yeah, no, that's great. And on these government type contracts, when you see them, sometimes, you know, I've seen a little bit of them where they want the full turnkey project, or they want the supply. And if they are going to want the full turnkey project, are you then just saying, okay, who are the contractors bidding it, and just sending them your bid package? Is that kind of how that works?
Yep, that's exactly
It
how it
can work that
works.
way. Yes. Yeah, we
If
partner with contractors. Many times we're asked to make referrals, and in which case, you know, we're already partnered with the contractor, which helps a lot.
All right, I want to ask you guys about partnership and having business partners. And you know, sometimes it's, you know, in some ways it's like a marriage, right? You know, you have different perspectives on things, and so how is the partnership going? Is there a senior partner and a junior partner in this? And how do you sort out your disputes?
Go ahead,
Great
Ray.
question. All right. So definitely Chris, I view Chris as the senior partner. He is the one that brings, you know, the years of experience in the lighting industry. He is the most patient man that I know, as I have had to learn quite a bit, you know, going from transitioning from, you know, other industries into the lighting industry. And then, you know, I have also, my contribution really has been the technology side, the getting kind of getting things up to modern days as far as, you know, our marketing efforts and that sort of thing. As far as our partnership goes, I think I agree. It's very much like a relationship, right? Outside of business, it's a lot of give and take. But I luckily, you know, like I said, I've been blessed enough to be partnered with Chris. He's very patient. He's very smart, very knowledgeable. Whenever disputes come up, I think, you know, we talk about it. We both give our opinion. And then usually he ends up winning because he has the most experience. He has the most knowledge. He has the most expertise in this. But I do get my wins every once in a while. Chris, I don't know if, is that pretty much sum it up? Would you add anything?
Yes, that's perfect. There's a lot of joking around and razzing each other and that kind of thing. You know, just yesterday we were negotiating this particular contract that, you know, where the, you know, the veterans certification gave us an advantage. And the purchasing department called our office, and you know, Louis answered. I happened to be at the conference table, and Ray was remote, and Ray got on the phone and, Ray said, "Oh, yeah, I received those documents. Is it okay if I get these done by tomorrow?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Like 5 minutes. You've got 5 minutes." But of course, I was just razzing him a little bit, Sure. But he turned those around, and of course, proof is in the pudding today, where we received the purchase order. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. We do have a lot of fun.
I would encourage people to be in partnerships. Go ahead, Ray.
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, you've got your ups and downs, of course, right? And I think when you have a partner who is who's willing to listen and accepting and willing to give positive feedback, I think that makes all the difference in the world. When you've got a partner who is their way or the highway, it makes it very difficult to work with them. And I've had partnerships like that before. And with Chris, it's very much give and take. And we've been able we've sort of like the yin and yang, really, of the business world, where he's very much, pound on the door, like, "I'm getting my foot in the door right now." And he will continue to follow up and follow up. And I'm very much the guy behind the scenes on the computer, doing I'd much rather be behind the screen, whereas Chris is very much, out there pounding on doors. And so, we complement each other very, very well.
I think
I gotta add one thing to that. And Ray, I know you'll agree with me, is that Louis Murillo, operations manager, yes, he's kind of the center of the hourglass or the funnel. And everything kind of goes through him, and he handles it, and he's incredibly reliable, very timely, and super detail oriented. So all of the estimates, the quotes, the purchase orders, a lot of the negotiations, specifications really are handled in that department. So I have to give him kudos, because we couldn't do it without him.
You should be nominated for the Linda Daniel Award, Greg.
This is a nailed thing.
That's a nailed award. I mean, that's for service to a company. The people that don't get all the glory, they get the Linda Daniel Award. So we should nominate him after the show.
Absolutely.
But the idea of someone not admitting when they're wrong or they can't be reasoned with, I think that's the number one killer of partnerships.
Absolutely.
Like you said, you have someone that, it's so obvious that this is the wrong direction. You're trying to convince them, but they keep going and they want it to have it their way. And I think the essence of partnership is really the willingness to concede, especially when it's obvious that you're making a mistake or you're doing something wrong. And in the age of inflation, we did a podcast on this on the Lighthead show or at the Business Blast, Greg, where we talked about, there's a lot of fear in the financial fear. People are worried about their savings. Listen, if you can get into a business partnership where you can get a piece of the action, the actual profits of the business, that's how you're going to win this inflation war, by getting into the game and owning a business. And people say, "Oh, it's so risky to buy a part of a business." Well, what do you think you're doing in the stock market? You're giving your money to a business, and you have zero control. Okay? And when's the last time anybody ever voted when they got those stupid stock shares in the mail? Nobody fills those out. You don't have any idea what you're looking at.
Exactly.
And you're going to say that that's more risky than entering a partnership with Ray or Chris, where you guys can take a look at the books together. So I encourage people to consider partnerships. But if the person can't admit they're wrong, Greg Eric, that's not a person you want to partner with. So I have a question, though. I have a partnership written down. I have marketing written down right here, okay? So marketing, Ray, is a term that people throw around a lot. I don't think anyone ever knows what they're talking about. They're not talking about the same thing, okay?
Right.
So when I look at marketing, I look at a hand. The hand is marketing, and then you have what? Sales, advertising, public relations, publicity, and promotion. Something like that on the hand.
Mm-hmm.
When you say marketing, like, what are you referring to exactly, those things? What are you doing in the background?
The marketing is just making the customers aware. One of our big marketing efforts, believe it or not, goes back to making sure that our customers are completely satisfied, because that does one thing that we credit as being, you know, probably one of our greatest features, right, is the word of mouth and creating those advocates in on our side. And so we view customer satisfaction as part of our marketing, because when we have customers reaching out to us because, you know, they know so-and-so at such, you know, unified school district, and they're moving from one to another, and they tell somebody in purchasing there, and they're reaching out to us. I mean, that's the greatest satisfaction that we can have, because we knew that we did such an amazing job that we're having customers reach out to us that are now made aware of us. So that's just one of the major aspects of where we focus our efforts, and we consider that as part of marketing is our customer satisfaction. You know, other parts of marketing, you know, of course, it's just making others aware that we exist as a wholesale lighting distributor. As Chris mentioned earlier, the Southern California market is highly, highly competitive, and we're able to service customers. We have national accounts with customers, and so we're able to service nationally. But the bulk of our business, our current business, is based out of Southern California, a lot of school districts and such. And so making those customers aware of the customer satisfaction, the service that we can provide. And, you know, the other thing that really makes us special is that we are a small business, right? We're a small company, which means that we're able to get intimate with our customers as far as getting to know them, like truly, really getting to know them. You know that when you call American Vernon Lighting, the customer is going to speak to one of us, and it's never going to be like, oh, well, you know, where's Joe? Well, he's gone. You know, you're talking to Julie now. And, you know, you don't have that with us because, you know, we're able to pivot quickly. We're small, but we're also able to satisfy even national accounts at that level. Chris, do you have anything to add?
Well, I would just say, you know, there's a lot of blocking and tackling, which is where kind of, you know, my functions are, you know, evolve around that kind of aspect, because we'll, you know, target specific accounts and we'll begin to develop files on them and gather information before we pursue an account. It's not always... Yeah. You know, we don't mass market. The mass marketing is where Ray is going to help us develop the shopping cart, you know, the website, the pages on the website, those types of things. You know, that's more the mass marketing. We just brought on a new ESCO that had some national accounts in Southern California. They literally dropped in off the street because they looked up our website. And I'll tell you, in Brea, California, we've got some huge distributors here that also sell lighting, but they're more pipe and wire.
Sure.
These guys came to us for the specialty aspect of the business, and now we're helping them to standardize their national accounts on a day-to-day basis, you know, with the newer technologies and upgrading those. So, you know, that's the nice part, where the new technology and the bells and whistles that Ray creates using some AI on occasion, you know, it's nice that he's up to speed on those types of technologies. But, you know, I'm the guy that's the blocking and tackling. So I develop the files, we study the customers, and then we pursue them and we develop it. And it's really a three-step program that we have. We don't pursue the customer to, you know, create a job for them. We're there to relieve them and provide you know, the service. And if, you know, they have another favorite provider, you know, we keep them, you know, in our files, but we're not going to pursue them. We spend our time, you know, looking to customers where there's really a good fit.
So just if you're watching, Greg Eric forgot to pay his internet bill, but he's back now. He quickly paid it while he was off, and the internet's back up and running in Minnesota for Greg Eric, so he's back. Thanks for joining us, Greg.
Hey,
for those listening, Greg's was gone for a little bit of the show there. The three-step program. I love this idea of studying customers, like seeing who's worth spending your time on before you start, you know, working on it. And then also like coming up with a strategy. I love that. Describe your three-step program, if you don't mind, if it's not top secret. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
No, like I said, the things that we do are, you know, at least with that I'm involved in this blocking and tackling, because, you know, I'm kind of the old school part of the business and raised the new up and coming, you know, he's the young buck. Mm. But I've got some experience there. And so, yeah, so no, we do, you know, the first step is to find a fit with the customer. And that's the developing the file, gathering the information, finding out who the key influencers are. Then there's the next step is the initial appointment. And there you have an introduction. You find out if there's genuine interest. And the key genuine interest is all important. Because if they're just kind of there for comparison's sake and they want to, you know, use you for quotes, for example, but you never get an order, that's not, you know, we're looking for a genuine partnership. Mm-hmm. And a genuine need. And then the third thing is, you know, can you convert? And that would be, you know, the second appointment. Is it going to convert or not? If it doesn't convert at that point, then you can certainly keep the relationship moving and develop services and announce, you know, new product technology. You know, as you get to know a customer, sometimes a door will open. So we keep the customers on file.
I'm not picking on Ray here. Sorry, I thought you finished there.
Go ahead.
No, but I'm not picking on Ray here, but yeah. I don't think those old school tactics, Chris, are going anywhere. I mean, they may call them old school, but I was having and you know, Greg and I had discussions about a nailed lighting specialist course that was based on sales savvy, because a lot of the new generation, and I don't like to pick on the millennials, they get so beat up all the time, but you know, there's a lot of these tactics, they're adverse to them. They don't want to knock on doors. They don't want to pick up the phone. You know, they don't know how to use email properly as a business tool and a sales tool. They don't, you know, they think that the relationship should be like Uber, where you never talk to anyone. The food just shows up at your door. But lighting is more complicated than that. And that, you know, and it requires customer service. And on the sales side, I think those old school tactics, those savvy, like how to follow up on someone, when to follow up, how often to follow up, what to do when you're on the phone, all these things are not being taught anywhere. You're kind of forced to learn them as you go through the process. And Greg and I both learned our sales skills just by working the phones and trying to sell. But I think that we could break this up into categories and teach this to people and even if you start thinking in terms of tactics, just to start thinking in terms, oh, you need to have tactics if you want to get this account? It's actually a really big account.
Exactly.
A lot of people want it.
Right.
You need a strategy if you want that. Oh, they're not just going to go to your website and put $250,000 worth of purchase orders in your website every year. They might, but a lot of people are not going to do that. And so, I mean, the idea of having a strategy and having a tactics, having tactics that involve one person talking to another person and reaching out to them is somewhat foreign to the new generation. And I think the winners are going to be the ones who embrace it, re-embrace the learning those tactics. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to be willing to take a no frequently. There's a lot of no's out there, you know, and, you know, you can kind of make a game of it and look for the no's. You know, and so you're a little bit more resistant to, you know, being, you know, tired and, you know, getting, you know, maybe avoiding, you know, certain situations. You know, you go out there and matter of fact, a famous author, he wrote 20,000 Days. You know, he said he started in sales and he said he invented that little process where he would just go out there and look for no's. And he said it literally not more than, 20 or 30 attempts. And he would always get a yes. He always get a yes. And
no is the second best answer. No is the second best answer. The worst answer is not returning the call, not answering the question, come back next week, I'll think about it. That's the worst answer. Mm-hmm. You know, give me a yes or a no, baby, I'm there. Okay, no, great, I'm out of here. That's an 8-month follow-up on me, by the way. That doesn't mean I'm giving up, buddy. I'm just going to follow up with you in 8 months. But, you know, so
exactly.
No is the second best answer. Greg, sorry, I know you wanted to bring up a question. You're
signaling
to me.
I know I lost out on a little bit of the show, but you mentioned Southern California. You do school projects. So can you bring me into that world, what a school project looks like in South Carolina, Southern California?
I
What do
guess
you
I'll
have
take
to
that
do?
one, Ray.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Yeah,
yeah.
if you want.
Yeah,
Yeah,
talking about the, you could do poll testing.
well,
Just
no,
kind
that,
of,
yeah,
I
well, the
mean,
poll testing is one aspect of our business that, I mean, we're very unique because there's no other distributors that offer that, and I try to kind of keep that close to the vest, but it's brought us into so many aspects. We literally just at a university locally here, we tested about 800 polls, and every poll, you get paid for testing each one of those and treating them, and it's an excellent service. We've discovered polls that have holes in the bottom, and these are high mass polls with sports lighting fixtures on them. Lots of hazards. We had a school district within the last, oh, probably 3 months. We get the Santa Ana winds here. A pole came down and landed on two cars for the teachers there that worked at the school. And the next thing you know, they want a proposal on the entire district for pole testing.
But thank God no one was
Um,
hurt,
but
right? Nobody was hurt in that?
yes.
Oh, no one
Okay.
was hurt. Thank
Good.
goodness. Yeah. And another pole just recently came down at a tennis court and came over the fence while people were playing. But again, these are all things, and that was one of the cities here locally. But that is just one aspect. We have another school district that is local where they're going one school at a time. We just finished one. It was about worth valued about $115,000 revenue, and the next one's going to be even bigger. And they want to get to these. And what we do is we make it easy for them. We get on site. We look at the very difficult applications and look for the upgrade, and look for things that are not as labor intensive. And we help them to put together their plan, whether they're going to use outside labor, put it out to bid, those kind of things. With the amount of service we provide on the front side of a project, they typically will not put it out to bid.
So I guess
So it
and to
creates a lot
kind
of
of
loyalty.
clarify a little bit more of what I'm asking too is what specifically do you have to do being that you're in California? So in Minnesota, I go into a school district, I look at a classroom and I say, all right, you can bypass a ballast, put in tubes, you can leave the switch as it is, you can put a fixture in, you can put a kid in. You guys have different rules because of codes and everything. What do you have to do like when you look at a school? Can you do that
Well,
same
I
thing?
mean, that again, typically you're going to let the customer, guide you to what type of service you're going to, offer or advise. Basically you're becoming a consultant. Sometimes it'll involve a utility incentive. And so if that's the main thrust, or sometimes they've been provided, they already have, the funding. And so in that case, they want to move forward very quickly. Sometimes they're developing a plan for the next year. It kind of really depends. And that initial part of creating the project for them is the key. But yeah, there again, you do have to be concerned with the electrical codes and so on. And we're pretty familiar. If not, we do seek, professional advice, C10, licensed contractors and so on.
You know, Greg, you should be listening to him about that poll thing, because while I'm sure California has a lot of aging infrastructure in Southern California, I'm certain that aging infrastructure
That's
is not subject
everywhere.
to is but it's not subject to the snow and the salt of Minnesota, which is
No
extremely damaging to poles.
For
And I'll
sure.
tell you, we run a nice pole repair business here. We do a lot of replacing poles, taking poles down, fixing them, all sort of stuff. That is actually a fabulous, really, really innovative service to be offering, guys, because up here you have completely bases of poles that are totally rusted out. You can see them. You can see them kind of tipping on their anchor bolts and stuff like that. And I think that's a, never mind that you make money doing it, that's a wonderful service to offer to your customers. Because how scary is it when one of the, even a 15 or 20 foot pole comes down, never mind one of these high mass sports lights. That is really scary, actually, to think that, and we have a
Yeah,
lot of
and I
stuff that's
will
30,
tell
40
you,
years old now.
developing the infrastructure and the expertise to provide ultrasound pole testing. It's very, very systematic and methodical. And so we provide a site map, complete site map, where all the poles are located. We also photograph every pole. We number every pole. We take a picture of every pole, and we note the light source on every pole. So sometimes that brings forth additional sales if they want to, you know, go for uniformity, upgrade a lighting system, and so on. But it's not easy to develop. So there are a lot of, you know, barriers to entry. And,
Can I make a little suggestion?
Sure.
You should add to that whether or not the pole is dark sky certified or not. And,
there you go.
Yeah, you could add that to it and say, this is actually a very high light pollution pole. Maybe you want to fix it. You know, like that. I was just thinking what you were saying there, that would be an interesting aspect to add to that list and just say, and by the way, 90% of your poles are high light pollution poles. What are you talking about? about 80% of the light has become sky glow. It's wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very sensitive about that here in Southern California.
Sure. Yeah. I love what you're doing. That's so smart. So smart.
And I do have to ask, it sometimes takes me three questions to get what I want answered. This one, are you handcuffed by your selection of what a customer can do in Southern California? That's what I'm asking. Can you, can they do type B tubes?
There you go.
You know, that's what I've been meaning to ask three times and maybe it's clear.
Yes.
Tell me, please.
They are allowed to do type B.
Okay.
In Southern California. Yeah. And you know, initially that was not the case. But now they're actually incentivizing that scenario.
Hmm. How about controls? You have to add controls in every scenario.
Say that again. Sorry.
Do you have to add controls in every scenario when you do a lighting retrofitter? Can you just do the lighting and leave the control as is?
Yes, you can. But you get in additional incentives for adding controls, such as daylight harvesting, dimming, etc.
So it's not as bad as everybody says. Everybody says California is weird and different and hard. It's you're doing lighting there just like we are.
Yeah. Can you believe we've spoken for 45 minutes? Crazy, eh? It's already 45 minutes we've spoken. I can't believe it. I'm just looking at the clock right now. So you know what? Chris, make this your final thoughts for the listeners because we don't like to go too far past 45 minutes. And then Ray will go to you.
That's good. Yeah, my final thoughts are, it's really a big part of the business is just having fun, having, quality people to work with, having great partnerships with the manufacturers in addition to customers, and, basically always trying to stay, it sounds a little trite, but staying ahead of the game when the manufacturing partners are concerned, because in this day and age, the partnerships are changing frequently, so you have to be very flexible and always looking ahead and having options. But we really just enjoy the business.
Ray, what do you got to take away?
So, let me collect my thoughts for a second. Everything resonated with me, right? I mean, we're talking about, finding the right people, getting in business with the right people, having those partnerships. I mean, this whole, thought of, the mythology of using these old school methods that are not really that old school, but really need to get reinvigorated. I mean, that's huge. That's something that like really resonated with me. And I think that the listeners should pay attention to that because yes, the newer generations are being brought up on different methodologies when it comes to business, but we should not forget about these old, we're not old, but these, original selling practices. And that was something that I'm going to be focusing on myself a lot more. So, other than that, you have to be willing to listen and you have to be willing to admit when you're wrong. It was a great show, guys. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for being here. And Joe, Greg, before we go here, we gotta say hello to some gangsters down at Satco, SATCO.com, the lighting gangsters.
That's right. Everything we talked about today, they can help you with. Satco's got it all. I said that at the beginning. That was a legitimate request from someone. It covered every single item and some. with options on it, all of them.
Got to have Satco in your back pocket. They're a great arrow to have in your quiver. They can be the only arrow you have in your quiver, actually. And, you know, I got to talk about nailed here, guys, for a minute. You know, if you know, people say, oh, what's the payback for being a nailed? What's my ROI? We say we turn that around. We want to get an ROI out of you. You got to give back to this industry that's given so much to all of us. And that's where you can do it. Nailed, you can get involved in our committees and spread your knowledge, share your wisdom. Come on an education committee and say, you know, hey, guys, this is what I think we need to learn as an organization. This is what we need to train our people on. This is how the industry should be run. Join our accreditation agency advisory committee. Tell, you know, how should we really run this industry and run rebates and incentives? So if you have warehouse in the, if you have a warehouse with light bulbs in it and an order desk and counter sales and you answer the phone, you sell light bulbs to people, it's time for you to give back. Think about doing it at Nailed. There you go. I flipped it all around on them, Greg. Go to naild.org. Of course, we have great education. And there's great paybacks for being a part of Nailed. But we also want a piece of your knowledge and what you can give back to the industry. So go to naild.org. Thanks for listening.